welcome to Co-Opticast, episode 93. We're going to do things a little bit different this week. We're going to go with some improvisational jazz music. So, on the drums, we got Mr. Locke Vincent. On the sad trombone, we've got Mr. Mike Katsafrakis. And on the cowbell, we got our very own Nick Paleo.
Donk.
I swear you're going to say on the keys, because he plays the keys every freaking podcast.
Right? Click, 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 click.
Well, Jason, what do you play then?
The skin flute.
He plays the jazz skin flute.
The jazz skin flute. All right. Anyways, welcome back, everyone. Good to see you guys again and to talk once more about what's going on in co-op gaming and what we've been playing and what we've been doing. So we'll kick it off with Mr. Locke Vincent. What have you been playing?
Played Mark and the Ninja. That's a really good game. You should all buy it.
Tell us more about it.
It's a 2D stealth action game that it solves a lot of the problems that's associated with stealth games. You know, pattern memorization, repetition, waiting around, that sort of thing. It definitely empowers you. It gives you a lot of tools and abilities. The flow of the game's amazing, and it's super satisfying to go into every situation and be able to know why you screwed up, or you know, pull it off flawlessly. And you know, there in between, there's a bunch of variations of, you know, setting off alarms and doing different things, and being able to go into every level and try it differently is really neat. The checkpointing system is super generous, so if you screw something up and you want to be a perfectionist, you can. It's not frustrating. And I'm a huge fan of like Thief, Splinter Cell, Hitman, and those games. Like, you had to basically memorize the level. In this, it gives you all these tools and lets you know what's going to happen before it actually happens, which is kind of cool. And then you kind of line up your, you know, you line up your moves, and then you kind of let things go and see it all happen. So yeah, it's just really, really well done. And that's
made
on.
By Clay, right? Same guys who did Shank.
Clay, I really liked the Shank games. Not perfect, but and definitely a case of style over substance in those cases. But this really, they really hit it out of the park with this. It's got the same sort of animation and cartoonish look, and very gruesome, very graphic violence. But man, the gameplay is just far and above Shank, and just probably one of the best games I've played this year.
So hopefully we'll see like a Mark of the Ninjas 2 Ninjas Strike Back with co-op.
Well, it's also, they just announced it's coming to PC.
Yeah, they announced that today. In a month, it's coming to PC. So if that's your thing, grab it there. I always double dip on Clay games. I don't know why. But they're fun. And FTL, been playing that release on Good Old Games and Steam for, I think it's like $9. Again, getting lots of buzz around the industry. People are enjoying it. It's very novel. Cool story. Kickstarter made by two guys. They got a ton of money. I think it was like $200,000 to make this just novel idea of a game. You have your ship. It's a roguelike is the best way to describe it. In space, you're the commander of a ship, and you have to make these decisions. Well, I guess first you have to sort of navigate the galaxy while you're being chased by this rebel fleet. So there's this line on your map of imminent death, and you're trying to sort of go to different planets and star points along the way before you have to go to the next area, and it kind of resets. But along the way, you get these random events, and that could be anything from a fight where you have to fight, or, you know, you can help do research, or anything from, you know, helping out this town of plagued people. Sometimes you'll get an extra crew member for helping them. Sometimes one of your crew members will get infected and you'll lose them. And it's all about these small little events that happen in your game, and it's really cool. It's such a digestible game because you can play a map or I guess a session in like 30 to 45 minutes, which is really easy to get into. It's not like a game of, you know, when you think Space Sims, it's not like Sims of the Solar Empire where it's like 4 to 6 hours, or, you know, like Free Space or anything like that. But Really simple. I was playing it actually on my laptop, which it's not graphically intensive at all. It looks like someone sort of sketched out on grid paper. I guess that's the best way to describe it. And I really like it. And when you're actually in the battles, which, you know, happens quite often, you are... it's in real time. That's kind of the only part of the game that's in real time. But you're managing all of your different systems on your ship, and you're kind of giving power to some. So say you get into a fight, you want to power up your guns and take off your oxygen.
But you can't take all off power from the tachyon pulse into the primary shields. Yes.
and when you're doing
like
this,
putting too much air into a balloon.
when you start the game, you're just like, what am I doing? You have no idea what's going on. But then, you know, 10, 20 minutes in, you're like the commander of Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. it's awesome. I recommend this game for everybody, even if the theme kind of turns you off. I know space isn't everyone's favorite, but it's such a novel idea, and it's really, really cool, just the stories that come out of each play session. But I played probably for like 4 hours in one sitting. I was able to unlock a ton of different ships, like a Borg cube was one of the ships, and it's filled with like these robots who are better at like mechanical things. I unlocked a Space Odyssey 2001 ship, which was just one single pilot, but then a bunch of like droids on the ship, which was really neat. So there's lots of replayability in there, and you can't go wrong for like $9. So definitely play FTL sometime this year, sooner than later, just because it's really fun. It's really cool, but other than that, lots of Torchlight and Borderlands, which I'm sure you guys would like to talk about as well.
Yeah, no, that's something that's been on all of ours. So, Mike, what else, aside from Torchlight 2 and Borderlands, have you been playing?
I have played through The Room, which is an iOS, an iPad game. And it is... the best way I can describe it is if someone took the Hellraiser puzzle box and made an entire game out of it. And
we're interrupted by the French.
Yes.
The French have invaded.
So anyway.
Tell her to put a headset on. Come on, let's go.
Yeah. Guys, let's not have domestic abuse while I'm talking about The Room. Anyway,
which is about domestic abuse.
Oddly enough, no. It's a game where you are presented with there's a wooden box, and you can use like it has some of the best touch controls I've ever seen. You can like move. You can pan around the box. You can look at it. You can zoom in. And you can, like, play, like, if there's, like, a drawer, you can, like, latch on to the handle and pull on it. And so you're constantly manipulating the box, and the box keeps transforming. And as the different parts of the box open, you get to get little insights into a story. Basically, the game is, like, the puzzles are the leavings of this guy who's discovered... A secret. I won't spoil. And so he leaves this box to you, and the box is the key to understanding the secret he's discovered, and the box continually transforms throughout the game. And it's just brilliant. If you got $5 on iPad, you need to play it.
That sounds awesome, dude. Like
it's incredible. And it's the interesting thing is it's not a horror game, but it's kind of a horror game. Because the further along you get, the more unsettling the ambient audio gets. There's no music or anything, but there's just it can get really creepy at times, and I can't really explain why without spoiling it.
Does it have Brad Pitt going, "What's in the box?
What's in the box?
Come on, what's in the box?" Does it have that?
No, you know, and
I'm
it's
not buying it.
It's well worth it. Jason and Locke, I know it's definitely right up your alley. You guys will both love it.
Well, any sort of way I can play with a Lament configuration, I'm in.
I guess the only limitation is that it is iPad only. There's no iPhone version, and you need an iPad 2 or higher.
Oh.
So if you have the original iPad doesn't have enough horsepower to run it. So.
Looks it's like almost, I'm getting an iPad 3.
it's almost photorealistic.
Huh.
Almost. It's not like holy crap, this is amazing, but it is the best graphics I've seen on a iPad. So
nice. Since Infinity
it's pretty
Blade,
sweet. It looks better to me. It looks better than Infinity Blade, but it's a different type of game.
Yeah.
So.
Totally.
Very cool.
Yeah, and you know I've been role playing as Butt Stallion and playing a lot of Torchlight too. So.
Wait a minute.
Let's move on.
Which we will all talk about later. Yeah, so Mr. Paleo.
Yeah, so Torchlight 2, Borderlands 2. And then NHL 13, I've been putting quite a bit of time into.
I was going to say. Nice.
And it is the biggest difference I've seen in an NHL game to date. The physics engine that they implemented for everything. Like, everyone I've talked to, they're very mixed on it because it's very realistic. And it's just too realistic almost. The momentum of skaters and the size of skaters and things like that really play into the movement and stuff. And it really makes the game feel pretty cramped now. If you're a larger skater and you work up enough speed, you cannot cut on the ice to save your life. There's a lot of things. You basically have to relearn how to play an NHL game. Because the old tricks definitely do not work anymore.
So are you enjoying it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I am, but it's very hard. It's a very, very hard game. There's a lot of new things you gotta kind of deal with. You gotta use your stick a lot more. The puck is a lot more reactive and bounces around a lot, and the guys don't necessarily receive the passes as easy and stuff like that. It's not tape-to-tape magnet puck. No, it's not at all. It's very, very simmy. With the default settings, it's very, very simmy. You can tweak it up a bit. What I really am enjoying, though, is some of the new stuff they added and kind of some of the stuff that they brought back. I've been playing with some of the Colony Gamer guys have a Hockey Ultimate Team, I think is what they call it, or EA Sports Ultimate Team or something like that. But basically what you do is you create a player... and you join an online team and you you play games with other people in team play. So like yesterday, I believe we played basically 5-on-5 hockey.
That's sweet.
Right. Everyone had a position and they had their player, and the camera follows your guy and, you know, you got to play positional hockey. It kind of gives you some visual cues of where you should be. And, you know, you set up some stuff. But then after you complete a game, you get points based on how you did. And then you can put those attributes into your player and you can customize it. You can buy equipment. You can increase stats. It's kind of like a little RPG kind of a thing.
But can you respec your guy? Because that's important to me.
Well, yeah, you can. And actually what happens...
Oh, shit.
Yeah. what actually happens is you build your left wing. You build your center. You build your right wing or defense and stuff like that. And so like you'll... Whatever position you play, you earn points in that player, but you also earn on a global scale, so you can put it into your other players too.
It's like a badass rank.
Yeah, it is like it's the Borderlands 2 badass rank.
Every game is Borderlands.
So that's a lot of fun. And then the big thing that they added this year is this thing called GM Connected, and it's really, really ambitious. It's basically you can have 750 players in a league, and every player... pick is one player on a team for all 30 NHL teams, all 22 roster spots, whatever that ends
good
up
lord
being. Yeah, it's insane, and I can't imagine the logistics of actually doing a league like that. We just did some stuff. I was doing some testing today to see how it worked, and basically the only time you could play your game would be as if the general manager of the team is online and gets the game ready to go. And then you could, so basically you could play, if you had a team, like everybody was on the team, like all 22 players, you could play against a computer controlled team, or you could play against a team of 22 other people. And, you know, if you're not on the ice, you're sitting on the bench watching the game until your line gets
so
called.
And the GM is sitting there calling line changes and stuff, or what?
I don't know. The GM doesn't necessarily do that, but the GM is the one that's in charge of setting up the game and making sure the stuff goes off.
Right. The do cool you thing coordinate, about all like, this the is halftime like... show and when the Zambonis go out on the ice?
Yeah. the really cool thing about this is, like, I used to play NHL all the time in co-op with a buddy of mine. We would just play on the couch, you know, basically shared screen and play through a season and keep the stats and stuff. And up until now, you couldn't do that online. You could only do that locally. But now with this, you can. So you can basically create your own GM connected thing, just limit it to however many players. You know, if you got two other guys you always play with. And then basically play through your season that way. It'll keep stats for you and all that other kind of stuff.
So you've been playing...
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Have you been playing against computers or have you been playing against other players?
The GM Connected, I've been playing against computer. The online team play thing, the EA Sports, whatever it's called, it's been mostly other people. So, but yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I had this discussion today. There's almost too much stuff in the game. There's too many modes. The menus are just confusing as hell because there's just so many options and they're buried so deep. There's, you know, you can still do things like shootouts and practices, and you can do the be a pro.
Where's the hot play hockey?
Yeah,
button?
Really.
So
it's...
I guess we understand now why all the players are on strike is that there's just.
I just couldn't get into the game.
Yeah, they're just like, well, fuck it. Everyone's doing our job for us now.
Yeah. And that's actually kind of the
poorly focused test user experience.
The sad thing
in
it all is that, you know, this is a lockout year, and that could I'll be curious how it hurts sales or helps sales. I don't know which way it would go, but it's looking like we might not have an NHL season this year. So
people got to have their hockey one way or another.
Yeah,
I can't wait for the collective bargaining DLC or, you know.
You just sit at a giant conference table in New York and you have to stare at Gary Bettman for 8 hours.
Someone needs to assassinate that.
Whoa.
I digress.
Whoa. Yeah. Cool. Well, this
sports.
Sounds like a lot of fun games.
Video games.
I've only been playing Borderlands.
My college's football team won over the weekend, so yay. Sports.
So anyways,
how about the sport of...
We'll move on from what you've been playing, because we'll definitely talk about Torchlight 2, Borderlands 2 here in a bit. But before we get to all that, around the horn, what's going on, speaking of sports, what's been going on in the news lately? Castle Crashers. Yeah, is this where we bring in the little graphic of the airplane spinning around the world? Castle Crashers gets a PC Mac release date, finally.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, as if there wasn't enough... out right now to occupy your time with. So everyone who's been waiting to play that game because you haven't gotten on the Xbox or on the PS3, finally have a chance to pick it up, and it's definitely worth playing.
And we will have some codes to give away for
Ooh.
That.
So
yeah. I've been working some backroom deals.
So the guy who's listening, who's watching this right now, you got the inside scoop. Because this audio probably won't go up until Thursday, so bam, you're ahead of the game. Watch the video cast, people. All right, so Dark Souls, Prepare to Die Edition, content date for consoles. Something, I don't know, are you excited about this, Locke? You played a lot of Dark Souls.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm curious to see. I haven't grabbed it on PC yet. Mostly
yet.
I probably
Steam
will
sale.
During a
because,
Steam sale.
Because, yeah, there hasn't been a Steam
but,
sale.
But,
or a good old game sale.
No, the reason being is, like, I have 5 ridiculous characters on the Xbox, so kind of want to do it with one of those guys. Yeah. Probably.
Do you think you'd be able to, you know, like, pull your Dark Souls save onto a memory card and rip it out and transfer it to PC? Because a lot of games, you can do that.
Yeah, probably. I'll try, actually, when I get the PC version. I'd like to see if I can move a character over or something. So
That would be rad, because I know I would hate to have, like, 300 hours invested in a character and then have to start over.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, they got new... like new weapons, armor. There's new NPCs. Obviously, new bosses, which is sweet. We've seen the Chimera, which has been on all the trailers and all the trade shows. big, huge-ass dragon, which they've been showing off recently. But yeah, no, definitely excited to get back into it. Kind of weird. This happened a couple weeks ago, but kind of weird to hear the creator of it talking about making an easy mode, which I'm not...
Internet exploded.
Yeah, and I that's fine, and I'm not saying, oh, keep it pure. Like, Dark Souls, I like Dark Souls because it's hard. I like Demon Souls. I like those games because they're difficult, and I wouldn't want anyone to sort of not enjoy them because they're too difficult, which I think many people do. Like, that's why a lot of people don't play these games. But at the same time, most of my enjoyment and satisfaction comes from overcoming a really difficult thing in this game. Like, it's a really cool world. It's a really neat experience. But I mean, like, put it on... I'm not one to put it on easy and just cruise through the story, because the story is, like, not great. Yeah. So,
but actually, the interesting thing, I played a lot more Demon's Souls than I did Dark Souls, and the thing that I really liked about that game wasn't so much the story, but the fact that your attention to detail and your willingness to explore would alter the story
totally,
of that game.
Totally. And how much,
like,
you paid
people,
attention.
Like dudes that would show up in an early level that you didn't even know were there, but you can affect where they show up later and whether they appear way later as a boss.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You know, these levels of complexity that those games have is overshadowed by the fact that they're, you know, difficult.
Yeah. And I think they've been working on the online connectivity still, which is nice to know, because it's not perfect. Like, when I played with Andrew, you know, we had a couple times where we couldn't connect for whatever reason. And so from what I've been seeing on the screenshots and videos and stuff is, like, there's a ton of people that you can summon. Like, I don't know if they're, like, condensing servers or what they're doing, or, like, making it less of an, like, instanced thing. But yeah, it'll be sweet. Of course, people that played Dark Souls are going to buy this, but I don't see it as a reason for people who haven't played Dark Souls to get it. But
you can summon your entire NHL hockey.
Well, if you get the PC
league
version, you really need.
Right. Yeah.
And for players who may have skipped on the PC version, there's some good mods out there that fix it.
Yeah, like the high res mod.
Yeah.
So.
The frame rate mod.
Yeah. Cool. Sweet.
So, speaking of high res, high rate mods and killing things, I don't know. Resident Evil 6.
Good try. Yeah.
You kill stuff.
It
looks better than it did back in Resident Evil days. Resident Evil 6 public demo is now available. So the demo that they released with Dragon's Dogma has now been made publicly available, and they've actually added some content to it. And Andrew kind of took a little bit of a spin with it and saying that, you know, you get to play through the three different campaigns that they have with Leon and Chris and Jack. Is that the new guy's name?
Yeah.
I think so.
And they do have two-player online co-op that you can also play through. Pretty much seems like, you know, a lot of it's what you come to expect with Resident Evil now, but obviously with the different campaigns, there's a little bit of a different style to each one with the different characters.
I played the Leon one in the demo. I thought it was pretty cool, like just the look of it and how some of the things moved. It felt pretty good to me.
Yeah, the interface changes I really clung on to. I thought the switch in weapons and inventory that's usually been a problem for me in those games. And, you know, the gameplay is what it is. You shoot zombies in the head. Those changes, so, I think, will be cool. And I'm curious to see what people think of the demo.
Does Chris, I mean, having played both Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 5, then, does Chris feel like Chris? And does Leon feel more like...
Because
people talk about Resident Evil 4 like it was this shattering revelation. I mean, like, they got the gameplay right and the controls and everything.
But, well, I guess you can argue two different things. Like, the look and feel of Leon's stuff looks more like Resident Evil 4. Like, it's very dark, gloomy, really somber tone, very slow. Whereas Chris's stuff is like, there's a war going on, there's things exploding, and it's very, it's like an action movie, whereas
Gears of Zombies.
Leon's, Yeah, it's like Gears of Zombie, whereas Leon's is like a more traditional sort of slow-paced, you know, horror game. So, with some, you know, shooting spliced in. But, yeah, in terms of those, they do definitely feel separately. They control exactly the same. Like, every character feels the same in that sense. They have different movesets and weapons, but I think the differences will come from the writing and the layout of the stories and the environments, I think. And just the design choices there.
Very cool. Yeah, definitely interested to see kind of once it fully gets released, what all it kind of looks like and how it plays out for them.
When's that coming out?
Like 2 weeks.
October 6th.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Jason, when you're hanging out here, maybe we'll have to pick it up.
Next bit of news.
Record another video.
Right. Do you guys have a play date?
We do.
Nice.
It's a play date that's 5 hours for me to get there, or whatever it is, for the plane flight.
That's exciting.
It is.
We have a date with Cards Against Humanity. That's really what we got.
Wicked.
And some terrible, terrible things. So, you know, last time on our last podcast, we talked about PAX, obviously, being the big thing. And, you know, since then, there's been some more stuff that we've talked about. One thing that I thought was kind of interesting, Mike certainly can speak more to this, was he mentioned in the previous podcast about going and seeing Epic Mickey 2 with Warren Spector. Well, the video from that, which it looks like Locke kind of snuck a camera into or something. I'm not sure.
Locke,
it was really hard to find that friggin' boardroom.
It was. No, I got lost finding it too. But Locke showed up about 15 minutes into it, so he wasn't. They allowed video recording, but he didn't have time to actually get everything set up. And there were other people already there.
I picked my seat. Somebody's it was a bad seat choice. I think that's my dryer. I went in and I was all flustered and I just sat down instead of like looking and seeing Mike and sitting beside Mike, who is directly across from Warren Spector. So I just point my camera at his face. So I'm sitting beside some big dude, but so I spliced a bunch of Epic Mickey gameplay over.
It's a great video.
I have audio
wrong.
Of the entire.
But I just like the fact that it looks.
I have audio of the entire session. If anybody wants me to post it,
it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. So talk some about that, because I mean, in part of the video, you ask him a question about the co-op and some of how you can explore the world more than if you were just to play by yourself.
So it's Mickey and Oswald they have asymmetric abilities. Mickey has the paintbrush and does the, you know, he can paint things into the environment or basically use paint thinner to delete them. And Oswald has the ability to control machinery. He has a little remote control, and he has the ability to pick Mickey up and like, kind of like when Sonic grabs onto Tails in the 5 out of 5, Sonic 2, and glide around. So if you're playing in co-op, you're actually more mobile than you are by playing on your own, and those abilities that Oswald has become contextual. So I need to glide this long gap, and I maneuver to the top of the long gap. In single player, it'll like button prompt you to hook up with Oswald and do the move, whereas in normal co-op you can just do that. So it gives you another option for, you know, making some of the trickier jumps or getting to places you might otherwise not be able to reach on your own.
Right on.
So that's pretty cool. Basically what Warren talked about the whole time was how he feels that people need to basically stop asking him to make Deus Ex again, because he feels like he's made Deus Ex over and over again simply because his design philosophy is to empower the player to tackle a challenge however they want. His example in Epic Mickey is you can sidestep combat almost altogether by choosing to go like a hardcore platforming route throughout the game. You don't have to fight bosses or enemies, if you don't want to kill them, you can do a no-kill playthrough in Epic Mickey. You can influence the story based on your decisions whether to create or destroy. And he really talked a lot about when, as a player, he doesn't like ever getting to a point where you get frustrated and put the game down. So he always wants to design to allow people to progress. If one challenge is too difficult, he doesn't want that to be a closed door. He wants you to be able to regroup and explore a little bit more and maybe find another way to do things. And from what we saw with Epic Mickey, that really holds true. I mean, they showed, three or four distinct paths through a level, and you can take any of those paths, you can combine them to make like a half and half. You can basically mix and match it however you want to get through the level, and it rewards you equally no matter what you do. So it seemed pretty cool. There's a little bit of one of the big things is that, it is a platforming game, but the creation and destruction mechanic actually emerges as a decision that affects gameplay. So you start destroying too many, things, and it affects the environment. The paint thinner gets in like water and gets everywhere, or the paint gets in the water and gets everywhere, and you might find certain areas are inaccessible to you because you chose to do something.
Now, does that game require motion controls, or is... No.
Nope.
No.
Because the first one
it can be
right?
played entirely with a controller.
Well, it was only on the Wii.
The first one was Wii only, so, yeah. This one, there's no Kinect support for the 360 version, but the PS3 version supports Move. And they showed that you can... The right stick behaves about like you think it would, but they actually have a couple options for you to like put like a bounding box to limit the right stick movement to inside the bounding box if you want to be more precise, or you can have it just be like your standard camera look. It seemed, I didn't play the first one, but this one definitely seemed like it could be a at least for our crowd, kind of a surprise hit.
Yeah.
It looks a lot more interesting than you'd expect it to be, and it's a musical, man. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those co-op games that obviously we talk about on the side and everything. But after watching that video and hearing Warren talk about it, I'm really interested in playing this now. Like, I'm really interested in checking it out and seeing a lot of these mechanics that he kind of goes into at play.
Yeah, I'll send you the audio. I didn't want to try and cut that down for a short article, but it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, one thing that kind of hit home with me was the difficulty that he has, or one of the biggest challenges that he had with the game, is trying to convince people that they can have some fun being a mouse or a rabbit. And
yeah,
that doesn't really fly with the dude bro Halo crowd, and that's fine. Like, they know what they like and they're going to stick with that. But I mean, people that are, normally wouldn't play something like this probably should. I'm stoked for it. Like, it gave me hints of like Mario Galaxy, which I really liked, and just really cool platforming, cool characters and kind of little missions scattered throughout the land. And man, like, Disney's got some really rich history and some cool levels that they can pull from. So,
yeah, I think the what really hit home is that he talked about his example was a parent and a child playing together.
Right. Yeah.
And because it is drop in, drop out and local only, it'd be really easy for, like, if I was playing and my daughter was a little older, maybe she could just pick up a controller and start playing and put it down when she's done. And the game seamlessly transfers between those modes. And it's cool.
Yep.
And I didn't want to pay any attention to it at all. And then, we got a, I wouldn't say we got the hard sell, but you know, we got a lot of insight into what that game is all about, and it's definitely more than there appears to be.
Yeah, definitely, and I mean, it's worth going to watch. I say watch that video and everything, and I knock Locke just a little bit because it almost seems like a trench coat cam, like the video camera wasn't allowed inside of there.
Yeah, sorry.
No. It felt more like they're like, you can't take really video. And he was just like, I'm going to try and sneak this on my iPhone. But, like, as always, it's a very good video. It's worth watching. It's worth hearing Warren just talk about this because.
What is that terrifying
the
noise?
The black choppers are coming. So we'll move on to the next topic.
I think that was on. That's on Nick's end, I think.
Whoa. So anyways.
Whoa.
So speaking of other things and speaking of Halo dude bros, Halo 4.
That's
Hey, dude bros.
Dude bros.
Let's all teabag. Yeah.
Some campaign impressions and screenshots and additional screenshots have come out.
No scope, dude.
No. So,
wow.
Arthur over at Polygon, you know, the Verve, their little game, I think. Verge.
The Verge.
Had some time recently to spend with Halo 4, and he wrote up a bunch of impression pieces about it, and lots of information, series of articles, but one thing that came out of it was the way that the campaign plays a little bit differently, which, Nick, you've also talked about before, of how different the Promethean forces feel versus the Covenant forces.
Yeah, just a little bit. I played with the Spartan Ops mode, where we faced off against them. You know, it was immediately apparent that they were very different, that they were a lot more like aggressive and more of like a swarm kind of where's ours? Bring one for everybody. I don't even know what it is. Oh, is that a chai latte?
Yes.
Sweet. But yeah, no.
Halo,
yeah,
right?
Halo. Video games. No, but yeah, so the little bit that I did get to play of it, it was definitely apparent that the new enemy type felt, it wasn't just like a Covenant reskin or anything like that. They did a lot of things differently. The style of play it forced you into was a lot different. So, and that was kind of reinforced by the article over at Polygon, kind of said how they took the normal Halo formula and kind of inverted it on the player. So, and the interesting thing too is that Halo 4 is going to have the Covenant in it as well, and then it sounds like the Covenant are going to be against this kind of third race as well too. So maybe we'll see some, you know, some clashes between them in the game. One of the things that, you know, kind of related to what we'll talk about in a little bit with Borderlands 2 that I'm really enjoying is how you see the enemies kind of fight each other, that there's a little skirmishes and stuff between them. And it's something like, I don't know why games stopped doing it. The original Doom had it, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was right? In Doom. This is
I know,
a new
like
thing.
But it just kind of dropped off. But it's just that little touch of something like that is really cool. And
you know what else has that? Borderlands 2.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's what I was saying. Epic Mickey 2.
Anyway, but yeah, anyway. I thought that was a really good preview in terms of like not being spoilerish at all, but kind of talking
Here's
about the experience
information.
Cool.
So since you got the mic and you're rocking it there, Mr. Paleo, do you want to tell us something about your game?
The patch finally hit freaking Xbox Indie Games after 3 months.
Woo!
Pop Party. The champagne.
I don't know, miraculously it was funny too, because I pushed it out there and I didn't even bother with it. I just let it run its course, and it took about 2 weeks to get through peer review, but it's up. We dropped the price to $1 for the game on Xbox to kind of be in line with everything else on there, because there's very few things above $1, and it dropped the PC version's price as well. I dropped it like $1 across the board, and then we also have it on sale right now for 50% off, because we're good guys, And so you can get it for, I think it comes out to like $1.30 or something, $1.40.
So basically what you're saying is you can get two games for the price of one.
Yes, exactly.
You can buy you and your
PC
friends can
and
play.
Xbox indie games.
Nice.
Right now.
What's just curious, what's been your sort of impression of indie games as far as that pricing point goes? Because I definitely noticed that too, that more and more games now, you don't see anything above 80.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. In terms of, I'm hoping, obviously, that, you know, more people buy it. Because you can see your trial to purchase ratio on indie games. And I think, you know, since it launched, we probably had about 2,500 downloads. And when they were just shy of, like, 200 purchases, when it was at the $3 price point or whatever it was. So that was, you know, just under 10%, which I guess 10% is a pretty good tie-in ratio or conversion ratio.
Conversion, yeah.
So we'll see if it gets any, you know, gets any higher.
Do you think there's a lot of kind of pressure basically through the market to force the price to that, since you don't see a whole lot of
$2.40 yet? Definitely. Yeah. I don't know. I felt compared to some of the other games that were charging the, you know, the higher price point, I thought we matched up with them pretty well in terms of features and polish and stuff like that. But, you know, there are other games that are much more polished than ours and that are a buck. But then there's things like I was telling Mike the other day, you know, I did some playtesting of some stuff just to kind of, you know, do the community thing. And there's like College Lacrosse game on there. You know, it's a $5 game, but it's really well done and it controls and plays really well. You don't have, you know, obviously like college licenses or anything like that, but from a pure like gameplay perspective, it was pretty top notch. So you know, anyway,
right on.
But yeah, so cool. That's out finally, patches there. That brings the Xbox version up to par with the PC version in terms of some tweaks and features and some other things.
And on PC, you grab that on Desura.
Yeah, you can grab it on Desura. We're going to be on Amazon. There's been a little bit of a hang-up. Amazon's kind of redoing their downloadable wrapper stuff, I guess. So right. It was supposed to be on Amazon last week, but they said to just hold off, and it's going to be a couple more weeks. So.
And potentially...
Yeah, actually, they just didn't want us to hurt Borderlands 2 sales on Amazon. So
yeah, that's right. Just keep telling yourself that.
Yeah. There's only room for one co-op game.
That's right. And potentially, speaking of indies and everything else, I mean, you guys are in the Steam Greenlight program.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Whatever that is, yeah. There is,
I don't know. It's just, I mean, you know my feelings on it from your article, which, you know, you're going to kind of hit on a little bit here. But
yeah.
I still don't think Steam really knows what it wants to do with that, and the community definitely doesn't know what it's supposed to be by the rash of comments I've seen that vary from everything from,
oh, those comments are useful, what are you talking about?
You need to rewrite your entire game from scratch, and it needs to be like X game, because that game was the best one.
This game reminds me of X game, but
I want it to be like Y game.
I think I'd rather just go play X game.
It's just...
Thanks.
So, that said, there has been, you know, there's some obviously helpful criticism, and a lot of it's things that, as an indie developer, you know already. It's just not within your scope or ability or budget or whatever to do. So,
as Nick was referring to, there was that article put up a couple weeks ago that I kind of got a lot of input from around the indie development community as much as I could about Steam Greenlight and sort of comparing it to the other indie development platforms that are certainly out there and available to folks right now. And the long story short of it is that, as Nick said, it's not quite there yet. It's not quite certain what it's going to do, because even the 10 games that got greenlit, no one knows exactly what's happening with those. I mean, there's some that are like, hey, yeah, we're out because we're a free mod, so we're not charging anything. So here you go. The mod's done. Just we're releasing it through Steam as opposed to just go to our website and download it, which in some cases you could do that already. Yeah. So there's a lot of questions that I think Valve still has to kind of answer and figure out. And mods is one of those that I kind of try and do my best to be PC, but I'm ching about this. But addressing mods is probably going to be one of the biggest things that Valve needs to do, because I think
I honestly think we're going to see it evolve almost into something like Xbox indie games, in the sense that you pay to get on the service, you're kind of rated up to a certain point, and then you're published in a little separate section on Steam.
Which I kind of hope that it doesn't.
It might be a tiered thing where you get rated to a certain point, they give you access to the Steam SDK, then you get taken to the next point, and then you put that out to something else, and then maybe at that point is when there's some sort of approval from Valve or whatever else. But I have a feeling they're going to let a lot more on it, and it's going to remain like a little sub hub instead of going to Steam proper.
And I really feel though like they need to tie some sort of funding element to it, because there's people running Kickstarter campaigns off their thing that, like, part of their pitch is like, hey, go support our Kickstarter for this. And it kind of makes me wonder why I'm there in the first place at Steam if I can just go to Kickstarter and support it and fund it through that. I mean, there's an element there I think eventually Valve may or may not tie into, but I'd like to see them be able to bring those two together in some way.
I mean, it could be as simple as a pre-order.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't.
Well, that's kind of all the news that we got for this time around, and what we've been saving and building up to and teasing you with and just delicately dangling in front of you before snatching it away at the last moment. Borderlands 2 and Torchlight 2. Which one should you love more and shower all your attention upon? Go.
Torchlight.
Whoa.
I don't know. I've been splitting my time equally between the two.
So let's talk first about Borderlands. Let's talk about just like the game itself, what your guys' experience has been, what you really like, what isn't quite so good this time around. And what present lock is currently wrapping?
Wrapping up my diamond pump.
I actually, the only problem I have with Borderlands 2 is that like the first one, the first hour and a half of it just is really boring.
Oh, man, if you could skip that hour and a half, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, in the first game,
Really?
Yeah, you didn't see the fast forward feature once you.
I think it's if you create a second character.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the original Borderlands, you get off the bus, you walk 5 feet, you're out of town, and then you walk 10 feet out of the town and back into the town for, over and over for the next hour and a half, and it's really dull, and then the game opens up, and it gets just incredibly awesome. Borderlands 2 opens up, and it keeps you moving throughout an environment. Like, it's very linear, just shoves you basically down a hallway and tutorializes along the way, but it's still really, it doesn't feel like Borderlands. It feels like I'm playing a corridor shooter and I don't have any interesting weapons yet. And your fun factor of that, because good stuff can drop during the tutorial, but you're just completely at the whim of the random number generator as to whether you're going to be poking your way through it with, by the skin of your teeth because you got a crappy weapon and no ammo's dropping. I didn't enjoy that. And then, once you hit Sanctuary, which is like the first big quest hub, the game goes wide open and everything gets way more interesting and the plot gets rolling and it's great. I've been having a great time since then, but that opening is just interminable.
But do you think that's because you played Borderlands 1 and you know what's comes later, but someone that never played a Borderlands game needs that intro part.
But in the first game, I was really bored in the tutorial bit too. Like it doesn't do a good job selling itself in either case.
And see what I felt
like this one, it's funny. Like the writing is great, and Claptrap screaming "Protect me, Squire!" is probably my favorite quote of gaming this year, but it just... It's just missing something. I don't even know what I would recommend to do,
I mean, you talk about the first hour and a half of Borderlands being boring, and I don't know, I never really felt that way about it. I mean, like, yeah, it got a little bit of, okay, can we move on to the next area, but I felt like the difference between this and Borderlands, one is that you had something to do. Like, Borderlands, kind of, you get to that town, and then there's quests to do right away. Like, you have a series of quests that all of a sudden you go on, and so they might be fetch quests, but at least they take you to different areas, and so you feel busy. Like, you feel like there's something for you to do. Borderlands 2 opens up, and you're absolutely right. It's a corridor. You just go down this hallway, down this path, and there's little things that you can open up a door and kind of see what's over there, but until you get to Sanctuary, which can take a while, you're just kind of sitting there, like, wondering why, you know, when is this all there is? Is this what the game is? And that's a real problem to me, is people who sit down for 15 minutes in Borderlands, at least they kind of see, oh, there's a lot of quests and different things to look at. 15 minutes in Borderlands 2, you don't even realize the fact that there's more to it. Like, if you had never played Borderlands, you'd be like, is this it?
Yeah, my biggest problem, Let me say this right now. I love Borderlands 2. I think it's fantastic. I think in almost every conceivable way, it's a bigger and better game than the original. But I had two sticking points that really wrecked my fun for the first bit, and that's the lack of ammo that drops relative to the power of weapons you have, because I had really bad luck with just absolute shit weapons dropping. And so it strings you up with two boss fights where the bosses against the weapons you have are just bullet sponges. And it really, I'm like, all right, I can only run around in circles so many times before I get annoyed. And I don't know. I want to talk about how great the co-op in that game is, because, you know, once you have a second friend, you have a second, third, fourth player in that game, it just goes... It was fucking bananas. Yeah, that game is great.
Like, when I hopped in with you, I had played that mission two times previously. We went on a hunt for a midget riding a
bully mog.
And that mission is one of the last tutorial missions. It's good, it's fine, whatever, it's tolerable. But, like, that was the third time doing it, and it was so fun, just, like, shooting the shit, walking around, like, seeing what each other can do, and it was infinitely better with people. Like, I don't think Borderlands 2 is a good single-player game. I think it's a must-play with two or more people, just because the parts in between the quests are, you know, running from, you know, town to town or point to point are... It takes forever. Like, I always joke, like, where's our hoverboards? Like,
yeah, you know, yeah. I think that actually, I don't want to interrupt you, but you've basically hit the point as to why, you know, if I were to recommend a co-op game, I instantly snapped to Torchlight is because Torchlight, well, awesome and fun as a co-op game, is also awesome and fun by yourself, and Borderlands can be awesome and fun solo, but it's not always.
Yeah,
it's
and don't get uneven. Me wrong, like, Borderlands 2 is so fun. It's an awesome, awesome game.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And I'm just nitpicking at this point. Like, I don't like that there's only one active quest. I don't like the inventory system. The shooting's a little off, but I mean, in terms of writing...
Yeah, the auto-aim is kind of crazy
but
this time.
Things like, so for, like, the active quest thing, they fixed it so... If you have, like, a subquest where you have to kill so many blah blah blahs, right?
It pops up updates and stuff.
You
it's
and
okay.
Show you, you know, so, like, there's definitely, like, improvements and stuff like that around.
No, there's. I'll give them that, but I mean, is it really that hard to have three diamonds on the map instead of one? Like, it. And that, again, that's a nitpick.
Well,
like, I can go into my menu and change the mission, the active mission, to see if there's something close by.
So there'd be three different color diamonds. Where it'd be like a diamond, a square, and a triangle. Because, yeah, I mean, some quests do have, like, five different diamonds on the map because they represent five different objectives that you have to go to.
And the thing is, none of that matters when you're running with four people. Like, you're just going along. mowing through tons of enemies, throwing, you're picking up guns, throwing away guns, you're throwing guns at enemies. Like, it is unimaginably fun. Like, it's so fun. The game is ridiculous. And I love the guns, and I will take a gun that is not as powerful if it does something bananas or looks stupid or shoots cats. Like, it's hilarious. Like, it's so fun.
My favorite thing about it is the upgrade in the writing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the writing is just, like, they brought in, he used to be one of the higher-ups at Destructoid, and he got hired at Gearbox. Yeah. And I guess he was one of the head writers on this one, and it's just, it's so funny.
Yeah, Jason and like I met Tiny Tina in our co-op session. Was that yesterday?
That was yesterday, yeah. Have you guys met Tiny Tina, Mike, Locke?
Oh, okay. No.
Best character in any video game ever, period. That's it.
And is that the one that's voiced by his sister?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, by... Sweet. Probably.
I look forward
because
to
they
it.
Had that. They had that. They had that web series that was really funny.
Yeah. I have no idea.
No, I'm behind in Borderlands. Like, I haven't played as much as everyone, and I'm trying to stay away from all these stories just because I'm excited to just go in fresh. But I don't know. I've got like three characters at level 10 all ready to go. So I'm once I get a nice long play session with a couple people, I'll, you know, really get into it, and you know, who knows, maybe some of those problems that I have with it will be gone. But I don't know, everything about it is great, minus those, you know, minor sort of difficulties we're having with a couple choices. But
we got to give him like props for co-op accessibility. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous how many options
easy
like,
it is.
The thing that blew my, you can drop in and drop out of a split screen game. And a split screen slash, you know, online. Like, it literally unsplits the screen or you know, splits the screen. And then you can change the screen vertically or horizontally. And it just, there's so many, like, accessibility options that they've added and just...
Totally.
Really, really made it easy.
And I really do like their kind of entry point, like that sort of lobby screen that they have is really well done. It's very unobtrusive. Like, they give you stuff in the background that's funny that you can kind of watch. And it's sort of... There's your stuff. Just access what you need to see where your friends are at. Go jump in their game. It'll tell you if it's a good
match. Yeah, you see how well you match up with them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, that all was really, really well done. So, yeah, from a co-op perspective, it's gotten better. I think they probably.
And it's funny, Mike, that you mentioned that you'd recommend Torchlight, because I'd actually recommend Borderlands to people for a co-op game because.
Well, I mean, as a, just a, you know,
pure,
I think...
Yeah, like purely
let
game
me, let me clarify. Let me clarify. As a co-op game...
Can I finish?
No. As a pure co-op game, I agree Borderlands is what I'd go with. But if someone is splitting their time between single and co-op, Torchlight's the better choice because Torchlight is a way better single-player game than Borderlands.
And I'm going based on the fact of, like... someone who, you know, trying to hit all, you know, lowest common denominator, I think people are going to enjoy a shooter more than, and that just comes down to genre, I think. They're going to enjoy a shooter rather than a sort of an action RPG keyboard and mouse sort of thing.
But the writing, who knows? I have to go back to here is actually the reason I've been playing Borderlands 2 single player so much, because there's like not a moment of that writing that I want to miss. Like, I don't want someone running off and starting a mission while someone else is talking. Like, I want to hear
you don't want to miss
every
it,
bit of dialogue because... And I was talking with Andrew about this. He was like, what? Like, you know, there's a part where a character is prompting you to shoot something. And he was like, you didn't just shoot it right away. I was like, no, I wanted to hear everything that was being said by that character until I, you know, until it was just like, that's it, dialogue's over.
He did the exact same thing with me. He's like, shoot it, shoot it. And I'm like, why? He's saying funny
things. Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to shoot it.
And that's the kind of interesting thing of like they did such a great job with the co-op, but they made it also kind of like, I don't know if I really want to play with my friends because I might miss something and I actually want to...
Because they'll screw it up.
Exactly.
I did get a kick out of the Cult of the Firehawk line. That was an incredibly amusing quest.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Yeah, and there's tons more on the way, too. So, Borderlands 2. Yeah.
Torchlight.
Not necessarily a great single-player game because, you know, it's got some problems of its own, feeling slow and the pacing, although it has great writing. Great co-op game to play with your friends because it gets crazy. Torchlight 2.
Go read Mike's
Torchlight
review.
Torchlight 2.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you all for another episode Torchlight. Of the Co-op, I guess.
What do you want to say,
Torchlight? Man? Torchlight 2 is a game that, to me, from the moment you start running around in it, is pure fun.
That's not in the review, so there you go.
I tried to get across in my review, but there's a fluidity to the whole experience that is not something you normally get in an action RPG. A lot of it is, you know, the game runs at a solid 60 frames a second. I saw some people saying that they had frame rate issues in the comments of my review, but I never saw a single frame drop the entire time I played that game. And so it has this ridiculously liquid frame rate, and your characters, everything is moving so quickly, and your abilities chain into each other so well that, you know, like a good rotation that you might get in it, like you know if you're like an MMO raider, you know like playing a class involves getting like a rotation down and changing it based on the situation, and you get a lot of that same feeling by playing Torchlight. Just you learn the ins and outs of your character. And one thing that I really appreciate that they've done is they don't limit your abilities based on how well you're trying to build your character. You can put 15 points into an ability and make it better, but putting 1 point into an ability is still useful. And it's something I was telling Locke.
Yeah.
Is that there's a lot of abilities that you're going to see that you're like, this could be really useful, but I don't want to play like that. But having it in your toolbox becomes more important than min-maxing it.
Totally.
And it encourages a lot of experimentation that, say, you know, like Diablo didn't, because there's no penalty to respeccing in Diablo. You just keep doing it over and over and over again until you min-max it to you either find something you like or you min-max it to the point where this is the one build that I have to play because everything else on the spreadsheet doesn't come out the way I want it to. And Torchlight, you know, Max and the rest of Runic have been saying that they want to put meaningful character growth back into the action RPG. And I was telling Locke that I think, you know, the wild success of World of Warcraft almost ruined a character-building game for everybody because they introduced the ability to build your character and then say, well, fuck it, I don't like this, I'm just resetting everything.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, there's a choice to be made when you build your character and you're locked into, like, the class you're playing. And I guess I get the point that's like, well, I spent 8,000 hours playing this character, I don't want to have to rebuild it all the way. I get that. But the trickle down from the respec in a game like that is affecting action RPGs and other games. Like, you can respec in Borderlands. But in Torchlight, what they do is they lock you into your skill. Like, you can assign your skill points, and you're free to do that however you want. All characters can equip all types of items, with the exception of a few, like, named items that are locked to a character class. But I played an Ember Mage, but if I want to funnel all my points into strength and dual-wield swords, I can do that. That's something that I can do with this character. And, yeah, that's probably a pretty stupid idea, but they're not telling me I can't do it. And I really appreciate that. And the thing that I really dug about the character building is that, you know, because it's all permanent, and you might, you know, I'm not so sure about this ability, you can reclaim the last 3 skill points you invested. So I'm going to test this ability out, realize maybe I don't like this, just go back to town, reclaim it, spend it in something else, or power up an ability I already have. And it you always have that out, but it doesn't let you sit there and reverse everything you've gone through. It makes you, you know, try and plan ahead a bit, and you know, if I put 5 points in something and I realize that later on in the game it's not as useful, rather than cry over the fact that I can't get those 5 skill points back, I just move on. I can move my next skills and the things that are more useful or more situational. So I guess what I really, really, really love about that game is, you know, when you're playing it in co-op and it's just this, it's very similar to Borderlands, the insanity level, because all of the character abilities in Torchlight feel ridiculously overpowered. You know, like when my level 6 dude could fire out, you know, 6 columns of flame that heat seek to the nearest, you know, enemy and, you know, completely demolish him. That's great. And then having 5 more people pop in and everyone's doing all this crazy shit and loot's flying everywhere and everyone's having a good old time because it's not grim dark. It's just kind of like, it's the difference between a serious adventure and a romp. Like Torchlight 2 is like, that's a romp. You're running around and just having a good old time and not caring who sees you.
Grab your Webster's dictionary and look up the word romp and you'll just see a picture of Torchlight 2.
Yeah. It's just pure fun. Like co-op in Borderlands 2 is pure fun, but I still got to say that the strength of being able to still have a ton of fun playing alone is why personally I lean towards Torchlight 2. Not that I would ever not recommend Borderlands, because that game is fucking incredible.
Have you guys been playing Torchlight?
I have, yeah. I've actually only played it single player. I haven't played co-op at all.
Do you like it?
Yeah, no, I do it in like you know, small quick bursts, usually like 30 minutes at a time. The only problem I've had with it is a lot of like traveling through previous areas. Like I'm having a hard time with the navigation in the game, the waypoint system, and
kind of, yeah, there seemed to be a lack of waypoints.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like I can't get to where I need to go fast enough. It's weird how you have to uncover the map again for areas you were already at,
because it randomizes the layout every time you pop in.
It just feels weird to me. Like it should be instanced to your game.
But is that on a per session basis or on a per?
It seems to me, I didn't bring it up in the review because I didn't think it was a huge issue, as it seemed.
Well, obviously it is.
No, but so if I played my game and then joined a co-op game and then went back to my game, the level, the layout had been randomized.
Yeah, I mean, I've never touched an online session or anything. It's just been, you know, between saves, you know, I went back and the one area I had to go through was completely different. I had to uncover the map to kind of get through it again. Okay. But
I don't know what that was, Locke, but I like it.
There's an Ember Mage in my house.
Yeah.
No, I was just curious, Nick, just because I echo pretty much the same thing as Mike. I have been kind of hopping back and forth between single player and co-op, and really, yeah, it is just it's hard to describe, but it has something that's just
an intangible.
Yeah, it's intangible. It's weird, and I don't know if it's because you know, we've, you know, established a relationship with the developer or what, but just like when I play Torchlight 2, it's just like eating your mom's best cooking. Like,
I'm glad you finished that sentence the way you did.
It is comfort gaming. It is. You're right. It is kind of like comfort gaming. It's like, that's a genre that I can go back and just infinitely play. I mean, every, you know, Jason knows. Like, I, you know, as upset. Jason and I, when we were like, Jason and I went to middle school together and first year of high school, and then I moved away.
Aww.
And we would play, we would direct dial each other and play Diablo.
Nice. We would.
So like, you know, we've been like, that was something that's always been kind of a thing. And so we played Diablo 2, and then we all got just obsessed with Titan Quest.
Yep.
When that came out, and it's, that genre for me has always just been like, it's what I most closely identify a co-op experience with. And to me, it's like the ultimate comfort genre. It's like, it's why I love Borderlands so much, because as you know, I love Torchlight and all this, but you know, it ties back to Borderlands. Like, why I like that so much is that it scratches a lot of the same itches that you get from a straight action RPG. It's not like the best shooter in the world, but it, you know, has that loot thing. It has the character building and all the other stuff I like, and it's funny as hell.
I'm really glad you talked about the character building, because I switched opinions on that. I was like, man, I really would like to try out different builds, because I got really used to it in Diablo. Like, after, you know, 80 hours of Diablo, you get used to kind of switching your character depending on your playstyle or the situation. But in this, after you showed me that forum post, I was like, yeah, I want to build a character and make meaningful decisions every level. Like, every single skill point that I invest is for a reason, and at the end of my time with my engineer, I want him to be, you know, this guy. He's good at robots, and he swings a heavy hammer. And maybe next time when I play, he's going to be something totally different. So,
and the thing I really did enjoy about that is you... you're not punished for being... You're not ever punished in that game for experimenting. You know? And the game itself is built around... Like, because, you know, there are each of your three trees has 9 abilities in it, or 9 or 10 abilities in it, and you can put 15 skill points in each one, and you realize the level cap's 100, you begin to realize you can't max out more than a couple of those abilities ever.
Yep.
So the way the world is designed, it doesn't let you screw yourself. You can make a weak build, but the game doesn't become overly difficult because you did. The difference between that and Diablo is Diablo, especially once you get to Inferno, the experimentation goes away.
Which is too bad.
Like, you will find abilities that are almost required to be used because of the difficulty of the mode. And there's still build diversity and all the stuff that they try and promote, but you can really screw yourself in Diablo, and it's dying as punishment in Diablo. Dying in Torchlight
doesn't matter.
You can choose.
It
doesn't matter. You just pop back at town, run back, or you can pay a little bit of gold to, you know, respawn right where you were. But it's, you know.
Oh, go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, go ahead. We're going into minutia now.
I'm going to bring up my problem I have with both Borderlands 2 and Torchlight 2, and
final this is the final word from all.
I want to know who makes the white items in the games and why even have them in the games. Seriously, do you ever use a white item?
No.
Other than level 1, do you ever use a white white item?
I've used the white album. No. It's very it syncs up with chapter 3 in Borderlands 2 very well. And yes. I've also used a white item in Borderlands 2 because there are some white items that are better than green items and blue items.
Okay, Nick, so here's your homework. Can you please start working on the Torchlight 2 mod that turns all white items into cash automatically?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's just busy work in those games. Like, it's just something else you have to look at, and you never should have to bother with it. I don't want white.
Yeah.
I forget which game it was, but they actually solved that problem, is that it was a loot threshold.
Yeah, Dungeon
where you
Siege.
Would actually not
Dungeon Siege had that. The new one, Dungeon Siege 3.
Yeah, you would not even see items. Yeah. Like, they would drop, but they wouldn't appear on the ground.
Dungeon Siege.
Like, the text label for them would appear if you looked for it, but like anything that was of, you know, green or higher would show up, and that's something that
I'd
that's
rather
really
just
valuable.
See little steaming piles of poop on the ground to represent that item.
Let's work on that.
Well, it's something. Oddly enough, it was something that that Deathspank did really well. Is all the crappy stuff that was out there. You had the meat grinder in your inventory. And you would just fire up the meat grinder and destroy all the shit.
Yeah,
that's true. But
video games.
Yeah, tune in next time.
for the next exciting co-opted cast when a bunch of grown-ass men talk about video games.
I am a grown-ass man. How did you know?
So until that time, don't forget we do have, Co-Optimus has our iOS, Windows Phone 7, and Android apps out there. We also have shirts on our Split Reason store, which are now on sale for just $10. Get while the getting's good. Is there going to be a new production line of shirts?
I don't know.
We haven't talked about it yet.
You heard it here first, folks. I don't know.
That's an exclusive.
That is an exclusive. It's so exciting.
I vote we turn Let Us Turn Up the Beats into the official Co-Optimus shirt.
I want that.
You need to put us in contact with the creator of that, because I require one.
I tried. He said they're on back order.
We could totally make a little Billy graphic for that with some nice headphones on them and making a salad.
I was going to say, it used to be like a patch of cabbage or something like that. That's just like rocking out with a turn. All right. So until that time when we get the Let Us Turn Up the Beats shirts in the store, still check out the ones that we've got. Leave us feedback, of course, on iTunes, in iTunes, and follow us on Twitter. We are at Co-Optimus. And feel free, too, to call into that number and leave us a voicemail, 646-926-6748. Make it a sexy message, and we will definitely play it on the air.
That's a lie.
Until next time... I am Jason Love, joined by Nick Paleo, Locke Vincent, and Mike Katsafrakis. Wish you all happy co-op gaming. Have a good peace.
Have a good peace. One. Yes.
Have a good. I said have a good.
Okay, I'm turning this off now.